It begins with the slightest flaw, be it the subtle whisper stoking ambition, the frenzied fury of battle, the despair of inescapable entropy, or the desire for change. All it takes is a single chink in the armor of reality. A vulnerable mind, a tainted soul, to unleash all the legions of the wary. To fight these supernatural terrors is to do battle with one's own darkest nature. Demons wrought from despair, obsession, fury, and cunning stalk through manifesting storms of misery and infernos of lust. Malevolent entities shudder in and out of reality, shrugging off hails of gunfire as though the shots had never been loosed. Heartbeat by frantic heartbeat, they close in from all sides. Those who stand and fight face a nightmarish battle against creatures that cannot truly be slain. And that delight in tormenting their victims and breaking their minds. Those who flee fare no better. There is no escaping such tireless malevolence. Even death is no release. For to die at the talons of the demons of chaos is to feel one's soul torn free and plunged into eternal torment. To pierce the veil. Composed as they are of the stuff of the warp, demons cannot enter, nor even exist, in real space at will. The tangibility of mortal reality and the temporal and physical laws that govern it are anathema to their chaotic nature. Yet there are many ways for malevolent entities to break through the veil that separates the warp from real space, or for unwary pawns to invite them in. Mass demonic incursions are apocalyptic events, most often triggered by warp storm activity spilling into real space, or else by a rift opening between reality and the warp. In either case, it is the flood of empiric energy pouring from the beyond that sustains the demon legions. They use it to manifest and sustain physical forms so that they can interact with the stuff of reality, and to power their infernal sorceries and vile weapons of war. As a rule, once the warp storm activity peters out or the rift is sealed, often by the desperate sacrifices of those with the knowledge to do so, the incursion ends, and the demons fade, wither, and are banished back to the warp. However, there are other paths by which demons may enter real space, rather than descending on a world in mass. Entities may slip through the veil by themselves to achieve subtler ends. Even a single demon is a jagged splinter lodged in the skin of real space. Over time, its corruption spreads until the weakened weave of the veil tears and another grand incursion begins. One common route by which a demon may gain access to real space is by possessing a mortal being. Unfortunately for the galaxy at large, there are many ways this can occur. Those with psychic abilities, either fully realized or nascent and as yet unguessed, are particularly vulnerable to possession. Their souls form shimmering beacons in the warp that draw demonic entities to them like sharks scenting blood. Each time a psyker accesses their power, they open a conduit between their mind and the immaterium. It takes but an instant of incaution or bad luck for a demon to force itself through that doorway and take possession of its victim's body and soul. Psykers are not alone in facing the danger of possession. Demons whisper into mortals' dreams. They play upon ambition, hatred, and desire. They trouble the tortured thoughts of the insane and the desperate, offering respite in return for living flesh. They haunt cursed places and wait for sentient prey to read the incantation, unlock the door, spill blood upon the altar, or whatever other ritual precondition permits them to pounce. Strangest of all, there are those mortals who willingly offer themselves up as hosts for demonic possession. They make such bargains in belief the grateful demon will grant them supernatural might. Yet, those who allow themselves to be possessed learn too late that this is not a relationship of symbiosis, but instead the worst sort of malign parasitism. Once a demon has seized a mortal shell, they assume absolute control. The victim's physical form becomes the demon's to mold at will. The host's personality is typically thrust into some small, dark corner of their own mind, imprisoned and forced to watch as the demon pursues whatever diabolical agenda it desires. Some possessor demons are subtle things who pick their victims with care, then exploit their position and influence to advance cunning schemes in real space. A priest, a politician, a military commander, or perhaps the tech priest who alone holds the activation runes for a city's plasma generatora. All such individuals can be immensely useful puppets. Other demons are savage and bestial, swiftly mutating their hosts' tortured flesh into nightmarish shapes more pleasing to their grotesque sensibilities before embarking upon murderous rampages. In either instance, the possessor demon can cause immense damage before it is banished back to the warp, usually through the destruction of its mortal host. Some of the worst and most inexplicable atrocities in galactic history have been perpetrated by demons who had claimed the bodies of mortal beings. Demons may also be summoned through complex and dangerous rituals or sorcery. Many are the forbidden tomes and grimoires that speculate upon the nature of such rites, about what it is that sustains demons summoned in this way, and why the utterance of words and the givings of offerings can bring them forth. D'Kael the Loathed suggested in his Apocrypha that it was the sheer belief of those working the ritual, coupled with the evocation of a demon's true name, that drew the entities from the warp into real space. Damaris the Thrice Accursed wrote in the Chronicles of Damnation that even the least demon is a sort of demigod, capable of taking the tiniest fragment of reality and crafting itself a physical avatar. The Maleficum Abjurum, much prized by the inner circles of the Imperial Ecclesiarchy, preaches that malign entities manifest only thanks to the inherent corruption and impiety of the heretic. There are those organizations and eldritch beings in the galaxy who possess greater understanding of the nature of demonic summoning. But knowledge is power in an age of ignorance and is not shared lightly. For most who summon demons, or must battle those that others have summoned, it is enough to know that the creatures manifest from the raw stuff of the warp, and possess all the inherent supernatural strengths and weaknesses that entails. Demons summoned by cabals of cultists or sorcerers may further be constrained to do the bidding of the ones who summoned them, though it is a tremendously difficult and uncertain process. There are those amongst the Dark Mechanicum and the Heretic Astartes who have even mastered the ability to channel the essence of a summoned demon into a war engine or ward-engraved artifact. Binding a demon into such a physical object effectively imprisons it within that one fixed fragment of reality. It further forces the demon to imbue its prison with that power, be it the infernal furnace that drives a Baroque demon engine to war, or the coruscating arcs of corrupt energy that render demonic blades, hammers, guns, and grimoires so deadly. Demons do not take well to enforced captivity. To them, mortals are ephemeral playthings to be used, tortured, and discarded on a whim. To instead be conjured and compelled by such fleeting and limited beings is the gravest insult. From the moment they are summoned, a trammeled demon will bend all its considerable powers to the act of escape. Some rage and fight, burning out warding runes, ripping free of hexagramic chains, and smashing their prisons asunder before falling upon their hapless would-be jailers. Others are more subtle, seeking to corrupt those who would wield the blade in which they are trapped, or who read from the pages the tome to which they have been bound. Promises of power, plaintive appeals for mercy, dire threats of retribution. A demon will employ whatever ruse is most in its nature to escape its imprisonment. In many cases, it will go further, finding ways to manipulate mortal playthings even from within its prison, and eventually fooling them into not only granting it its freedom, but also extracting revenge upon its summoners or triggering a full-blown demonic incursion. Demons summoned to the battlefield by devoted worshippers or the The obelisks of the heretic Astartes bear less rancor towards their summoners. They have had the door thrown wide to admit them, and are rarely under any gaze to serve the ones who conjured them. Demons unleashed in this way may form the vanguard for a much greater incursion. Unless confronted by those with the lore and power to properly combat the infernal hosts, these demonic cohorts will soon work their foul magics upon reality and force the fault line wider so that more of their ilk can pour through. More than one populous hive world or precious forge complex has been swallowed by the warp after downtrodden cultists summoned demons into its depths. Meanwhile, a handful of entities summoned into Extremis to act as allies in battle have on tragic number of occasions succeeded in plunging both their summoners and their foes into the abyss. The war unending. Those humans who know something of chaos speak of the long war. The conflict that has raged between loyalists and chaos-worshipping traitors since the dark days of the Horus Heresy. Yet those of still greater insight understand there is a more fundamental battle being fought, a war for spiritual sanctity and humanity's survival, in which even the most elite warriors and draconian measures are barely sufficient to hold damnation at bay. Locked away in rune-sealed and secret vaults lie records that tell of the Imperium's darkest hour, when War Master Horus fell to the temptations of the Dark Gods. His corruption began a civil war that brought humanity to its knees, unleashed traitor hordes and demonic legions upon countless worlds, and saw the ruinous powers come as close to victory over real space as they have in aeons. This apocalyptic conflict also saw the Emperor consigned to the life-preserving technologies of the Golden Throne. This, more than anything else, impressed upon the surviving Imperial leadership that the threat of the chaos demanded not but the most drastic measures to combat. Both the Inquisitorial Ordo Malleus and the Grey Knights chapter knew their genesis in that dark time. Since their inception, these organizations have fought the insidious influence of demons and striven to stave off the spiritual collapse of the Imperium. Yet, theirs is a war whose costs long ago spiraled too high to tally, and in which there is scant hope of final victory. The Ordo Malleus is amongst the greatest of the holy ordos of the Inquisition, that shadowy body that fights hidden wars against the greatest threats to mankind. Its inquisitors, who often go by the title of Demon Hunter, wield absolute authority to requisition armies, go where they please, access forbidden lore, and employ any weapon they believe will bring them victory over their foes. The Grey Knights, meanwhile, are an entire chapter of space marines trained and equipped to battle demons. Silver-clad psychic Templars all, they are entrusted with arcane lore and incredible weaponry that allows them to take the fight to the diabolic and the infernal. Both organizations appear mighty when their assets and abilities are considered in isolation. Indeed, with the resources, intelligence, and near absolute authority they wield, the Ordo Malleus and Grey Knights are amongst mankind's most potent agents in the war against the dark denizens of the Immaterium. Yet, when set against the eternal malevolence and infinite power of the demon legions, it soon becomes clear how finite a shield even these mighty forces are. Every day, across the vast span of the Emperor's realm, amidst the uncountable masses of humanity, demonic forces are at work. Whispers and promises from beyond the veil thread themselves through the pliant minds of the vulnerable, the jaded, and the despairing. Human populations and rogue psychers turn against the Imperium at the urging of supernatural corruptors. Full-blown demonic incursions erupt upon worlds that appeared loyal right up until the day of their own personal apocalypse. Warp storms rage, infernal legions spill from their depths to slaughter their way across the stars. In the face of such an omnipresent threat, the Ordo Malleus and Grey Knights must strive to counter those dangers they deem greatest. They cannot possibly be everywhere at once. This is doubly true amidst the shadows of the Imperium Nihilus, where entire systems were as good as lost the moment they were severed from the guiding light of the Emperor's Astronomicon. Yet even such triage measures are not enough. Those who battle the demonic menace must also propagate ignorance to serve as their greatest ally and weapon both. Even the slightest inkling of the true threat posed by the warp is considered too perilous for Imperial citizens or soldiers to possess. Knowledge leads to questions, then to doubt and fear. Soon enough, it is claimed, panic and rebellion would follow, throwing wide the very gates that hold back the infernal tide. Rather than risk such wholesale corruption, many inquisitors would rather exterminate entire planetary populations and liquidate regiment after regiment of Astra Militarum soldiery after the slightest contact with demonic forces. Even space marines are not beyond such purges. However, they are so precious to the embattled Imperium that, where possible, intensive psycho-reindoctrination is used to scour knowledge of demons from their minds and reconsecrate their souls. So it is that much of humanity believe the heretical worshippers of the dark gods to be deluded lunatics, and any manifestations of their patently false beliefs to be chance mutation or the work of Xenos or witches. While the murder of trillions of citizens is surely a sign of desperation, such methods have helped the Inquisition to keep humanity blinkered against the true demonic threat for countless millennia. Yet even here, the corrupting influence of chaos can be seen. Though ignorance may serve as a shield, it also leaves the vast majority of mankind singularly unprepared to recognize or defend themselves against demonic influence. Secrecy and inexplicable acts of genocide further serve to sow mistrust and acrimony amongst the disparate imperial organizations. Not to mention seeing countless souls condemned to death where they might otherwise have lived. And now, as the Great Rift splits the heavens, the ghastly truth becomes even harder to conceal. So ever more frantic and bloody measures are required to maintain the Imperium's greatest lie. The Great Rift. In the closing years of M41, a colossal belt of warp storms erupted across the galaxy, bifurcating the Imperium from the darkest reaches of the Segmentum Obscurus to the most remote extremes of the Eastern Fringe. This Great Rift not only severed half of humanity from the Emperor's guiding light, but also ushered in a new era of witchery and demonic rampage. There are many varied theories regarding the origins of the Great Rift. Fragments of rumor suggest everything from the fall of the Cadian Gate, the fracture of Craftworld Beeltan, the manifestation in real space of the planet of the sorcerers, or even the shattering of the demon cage of Amathal. The likelihood is that all these events, and countless others besides, created the all-consuming cascade of unreality that ripped the galaxy so completely in two. In the wake of this catastrophic event, there were few mortals with the time or security to ponder such questions. The Great Rift was, in truth, not a unified phenomenon, but instead a roiling belt of warp storms stretching across the galactic plane from end to end. Even a single warp storm is a deadly threat to all mortal life. A raging tempest of empiric insanity that spills through from the immaterium and corrupts all it touches. Warp storms swell and recede without apparent cause, sometimes blanketing vast regions. They foul any attempt at warp travel or psychic communication, and bring madness and mutation to every world, ship, and being engulfed in their sprawl. Demons are able to inhabit such warp real space interstices, and entire planets may be transformed into nightmarish demon worlds at their whims. Moreover, demonic legions often spill out of these regions to attack the tracts of real space beyond, given power and substance by the immaterial energies flooding out from the warp storm at their backs. The Great Rift comprises dozens of such immense metaphysical tempests, some of which have set to roaming the galaxy with an almost sentient malice, engulfing fresh star systems with every passing cycle. The Rift's impact upon vast swaths of real space and the beings inhabiting them was nothing short of cataclysmic. When the rift first erupted into being, shock waves of warp energy rolled across the galaxy to its furthest reaches. They plunged worlds into shadow and madness. Demons manifested in great hosts upon planets that had never known the touch of heresy. Plagues of mutation ran rife through almost every sentient species. The spontaneous development of psychic powers chief amongst their effects. As uncounted souls wrestled to control supernatural abilities for which they were wholly unprepared, so the demons of the warp indulged in a gleeful orgy of possession, corruption, and spiritual predation. The sheer upswell in background warp energies flowing through the void allowed demonic armies to surge into real space in previously impossible numbers. Amongst the most perilous of these were the 8 legions of the Blood Crusade, each of which rampaged across the stars, bringing slaughter in the name of Khorne. It was during this dark hour that the Blood God's demons assailed Holy Terra itself, launching a brief but exceptionally savage siege that was only repulsed at great cost by some of humanity's mightiest heroes. The demons of Nurgle, meanwhile, fell upon the Scourge Stars in shambling masses, and there claimed a realm in real space for the Plague God. A tri-lobe of star systems became extensions of the separating garden of Nurgle. They would soon go on to threaten the stellar realm of Ultramar with their fecund hosts. For their part, the demon legions of Tzeentch turned their gaze upon the Stygius sector, where they too sought to establish a foothold in real space for their master's realm. Worlds were transformed into prismatic ruinscapes of ever-changing madness. Armies of the Imperium, the Eldari, the Necrons, and the Orcs, and many other alien races all did battle with the scintillating legions that bedeviled them. Slaanesh's legions of excess, meanwhile, cavorted at whim across real space and invaded any world, void station, or nomadic fleet that took their fancy. They brought blissful agonies to every army that opposed them, while bestowing twisted crowns of excess on behalf of the Dark Prince to those mortals whose hedonistic extremes most amused them. Such invasions and diabolical crusades were but a fraction of the demonic incursions that struck the galaxy in the wake of the Great Rift's appearance. They have continued since, and might even have overwhelmed the defenses of many mortal races, but for one crucial fact. Just as the Dark Gods of Chaos are said to wage their great game against one another through the infinite realms of the warp, so now their contest is also fought out across real space. Even as the Dark Gods' greatest champions do battle in the Immaterium, so their legions, both demonic and mortal, fall upon each other across star systems already ravaged by war. Though it was scant respite for the races of real space, This has been enough for plans to be drawn, barricades to be shored up, and in humanity's case, the Inquisition to once more draw a tattered veil of secrecy over the nightmare that threatens the Emperor's realm. Bellacor. Countless mortals compete for the favor of the Dark Gods. Most fall, slain in battle, or physically and mentally destroyed by the mutating gifts bestowed by their patron deities. Those who endure earn the reward of immortality and become demon princes in service to the Chaos God they worship. Bellacor was the first such transcendent entity. Bellacor is also known, to those unfortunate few who know of him at all, as the Dark Master. Heretical myth tells that he was the first demon prince ever elevated by the Dark Gods. Unlike those who have come after him, this mighty demonic champion achieved apotheosis at the hands of all the great Chaos Gods acting as one. Nothing more is known of Bellacor's origins, however. None will ever know why the Chaos Gods set aside their rivalries to fashion such a being, nor what manner of mortal creature Bellacor was before his ascension. In part, this is because these events are lost to uttermost antiquity. Yet more than this, the Dark Master has taken great pains to obfuscate his origins, erasing his taloned footprints through the dust of past millennia. Bellacor is to a demon prince, as most demon princes are to the mortal beings they once were. Functionally, he has become a demigod of the warp. Not so great as Khorne, Slaanesh, Nurgle, or Tzeentch, but certainly possessed of both the metaphysical might and the mortal worshippers to qualify him as a power in his own right. Civilization after civilization has believed Bellacor to be a god and praised and feared him as such. Though he has taken pains to shroud his past, clues remain of entire planetary, even star-spanning empires that have worshipped Bellacor as their manifest deity. Crumbling friezes and vine-shrouded statues survive amidst overgrown ruins or upon the desolate surfaces of life-scoured worlds, hinting at veneration of the Dark Master. Such desolate echoes all suggest the same conclusion. The worship of Bellacor ended with the whole-scale destruction of his faithful. One after another, the Dark Master has laid claim to civilizations primitive and advanced alike, has established himself as their shadowy and sinister god, and has then driven his terrified followers to venerate and serve him unto their own destruction. Those seeking some grand motive for Bellacor's ruinous passage through the eons and his cruel use of mortals would be disappointed. The truth is that he is a jealous and colossally narcissistic being, as well as being merciless and cruel. Bellacor believes that as the first chosen of the Chaos Gods, he should be their greatest champion. That mortals, such as Abaddon the Despoiler, continue to enjoy the great god's favor in his stead enrages him, and leads him to plot endlessly for his own advancement, while at the same time taking his wrath out on all those who fall beneath his shadow. It pleases Belacor to receive the adoration of fawning mortal masses. It pleases him to drink deep of their fear, and to feel how their zealous terror flows into the warp and empowers his eternal form from beyond the veil. It pleases him to unleash them as his wild-eyed warriors, alongside demonic legions he has tricked or tempted into his service. When he becomes bored, it also pleases Belacor to destroy that which he has made, plunging entire civilizations into apocalyptic civil wars before moving on in search of his next victims. Belacor employs proxies and pawns to enact each new scheme. Yet this is not for want of his own martial and sorcerous might. When roused to wrath, the Dark Master can slaughter entire hosts of foes. Like unto a god made manifest, Belacor wields the energies of the warp to alter reality at will. He conjures unholy shadows, plunges entire continents into sudden, unnatural night, and sows dissension, mistrust, and terror through the hearts and minds of mortal foes. His terrifying blade of shadows exists in real space only when Belacor wills it to, allowing him to drive its ephemeral form through layers of armor and crackling force fields before restoring it to physical form deep within the bodies of his victims. Belacor is possessed of boundless cunning, too, both as a schemer and a grand battlefield strategist. Whether he desires mortal disciples or demonic legions to fight for him, he is almost always able to strike the right bargains and offer the correct blandishments or threats to secure the forces that he requires. During the War of Slime and Rust, the Dark Master extended his influence to steal away the planet Colossi, seat of the noble House Raven, and relocate it deep into the benighted Imperium Nihilus. At a stroke, Belacor gained a night-shrouded demon world to rule, and from which his disciples could strike out at the worlds of the Imperium Sanctus. Not only do his forces include those knights Belacor was able to spirit away and corrupt, and who now call themselves House Korvax, but also hosts of renegade Astartes, mortal cultists, and demons of all four of the great Chaos Gods. What pact the Dark Master forged with the generals of these infernal legions, what rivalries he has exploited, and what desires he has manipulated may never be known. However he achieved it, Belacor gained the allegiance of a combined mortal and demonic host of vast numbers and power. Precisely what evils he planned to work with this gathering of might were unclear, for, as always, Belacor's plans remained shrouded in shadow. Moreover, with a being so cunning and whose plans stretch over vast spans of time, it might be many years until his true intentions became clear. By then, it would be far too late for many luckless souls. The Eye of Terror. The greatest and most nightmarish of all warp real space interstices is known as the Eye of Terror. This colossal zone of immaterial overlap dominates the segmentum obscurus, and before the coming of the Great Rift, represented the single largest and most corrosive region of warp corruption in the known galaxy. Within the Eye of Terror, space itself is corrupted by the warping touch of chaos. Stars have become colossal runes blazing with eldritch fire, or staring eyes whose inescapable regard drives mortals slowly mad. Planets have mutated into raging ruinscapes, becoming nomadic and predatory entities, or have slid outside the flow of time, trapping all on their surface like insects in amber. Typically, of the inconstant nature of the warp, corruption does not saturate all those systems within the Eye of Terror equally. Relative geography and fundamental physics mean less and less the deeper one travels into this bizarre region. However, there are zones, particularly within the fringes of the storm, still broadly governed by natural laws. Even here, though, mutation and sorcery hold sway. Worlds turn beneath distorted skies ravaged by storms of coruscating flames, or haunted by fleeting and grotesque faces. Mountain ranges transmogrify into skyscraping skulls from whose cavernous eye sockets pour waterfalls of molten blood. Oceans clot into seething morasses of diseased filth, through which foul leviathans hunt and sport. Forests grow into masses of fleshy extrusions dense with scintillating cilia, whose touch brings blissful oblivion before draining their comatose victims dry. On these deformed worlds, once elegant cities become endless mazes that coil impossibly around libraries crammed sentient grimoires and hunched demonic scholars. Land masses migrate or do battle with one another, or drift away into the skies while trailing stinging tendrils across the land below. One world may become a hellscape where brazen demon forge towers over plains of blackened skulls. Another may run like melted tallow until it becomes an ever-shifting morass to trap the unwary. There are worlds that seem idyllic until one realizes that every species of flora and fauna has become an exaggerated predatory horror, rendered all the more nightmarish by their outward beauty. Mortal beings dwell on many of these habitable worlds within the Eye of Terror, albeit not always by choice. Primitive tribes and mutant cults raise gruesome idols to placate their demonic deities, their champions battling one another in the faint hope of of attracting the eye of the dark gods. Enclaves of piratical raiders, both human and Xenos, risk madness and corruption to hide out amidst the wheeling bale stars and carnivorous asteroids. Many do this because they know that only the most desperate and dogged pursuers will risk tracking them to such dangerous lairs. These tribes and gangs must find ways to survive the attentions of the demonic entities that hunt them like prey, or rule over them as monstrous overlords. Even for those mortals who maintain this perilous balance, there can be no sane or happy existence within the Eye of Terror. All living beings instinctively sense the wrongness of the warp-tainted reality all around them, and their minds and souls inevitably rebel. Greater and more powerful heretics, however, are able to maintain enduring strongholds within the more stable reaches of the warp interstice. Chief amongst these are the Heretic Astartes. Some warbands of these post-human traders rule hideouts little larger or more imposing than the pirate enclaves. However, trader legions such as the Death Guard, the Iron Warriors, or the dreaded Black Legion control vast swaths of tainted territory and strings of worlds within the Eye of Terror. The diabolical tech magi of the Dark Mechanicum also control facilities within the storm, infernal forge complexes, and unnatural weapons research shrines of horrific aspect and power. The Magi readily exploit the cessation of natural physical laws to raise colossal structures and planet-sized forges that would collapse under their own insane vastness and complexity outside the Eye of Terror. They channel the energies of the warp through runic lenses, entrap demons drawn from the tides of the Empyrean, and fashion weapons that would shatter the sanity of any other mortal minds. In the depths of the Eye of Terror are stranger and more primal regions where real space has been wholly subsumed into the madness of the warp. Here lie true demon worlds, where greater warp entities lay claim to planets and luckless flora and fauna, before refashioning them however they see fit. Upon such worlds, the demons of chaos rule like malicious gods. They meld and unmake reality at whim, channeling the unfettered power of the warp to do so. Air becomes solid stone, becomes raging fire, becomes gibbering flesh and liquid sorrow and carnivorous deceit. Worlds unravel into Mobius spirals over which demon legions wage sanity-blasting wars. Moons become vile steeds for demon overlords, driving titanic proboscises into neighboring planets and spinning cocoons of dreams and nightmares about their celestial prey. Worlds come and go like geist ships, dragging trillions of screaming souls in and out of the warp with them. Amidst these zones of madness, demon legions make their lairs. Some sail the warp tide aboard fleets of infernal ships. These may be mortal void craft stolen or possessed, or vessels of fashioned warp energy in the form of ironclad warships, rotting hulks, spinning disks of crystal and flame, or opulent void-born pleasure fortresses. Such demon fleets have been known to emerge from the Eye of Terror to reave the systems about its fringes, spreading terror and despair before vanishing again on the tides of the warp. Other demon warlords raise strongholds upon worlds transformed by their desires. From Stygian forges, the temples of wild delirium, rotting marshland fortresses, to clockwork city engines of infinite complexity. These fastnesses teem with demon hosts. They form not only staging posts for the ongoing wars of the great game, but also mustering grounds from which demon legions launch crusades of slaughter across real space. The nightmare truth is that, should the demonic legions prevail, the bedlam that reigns within the Eye of Terror will be the fate of the entire galaxy. Though each might pursue their master's unique agendas with single-minded tenacity, the ultimate aim of most demons is to manifest within real space and corrupt it entirely with the energies of the warp, until it too collapses into formless madness. Should enough of real space be subsumed, matters will reach a tipping point where that which conforms to sanity and natural law becomes a series of shrinking islands amidst an endless ocean of rapacious madness. Such a fate will bring complete damnation to all mortal beings. Those who understand the danger still fight against this impending doom. Yet, as the storms of the Great Rift rage, and the demon legions spill out to overrun one world after another, the last days of reality draw ever closer.